Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Beth, who is here to speak with us about an article that she recently wrote for the Recording and Listening blog. Welcome, Beth.
Hi, Jen. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So for folks who don't know, we have this fabulous website, recordingandlistening.org, where it's just a wealth of information around recording and listening. And because that's such a foundational part of practice, we have an entire website devoted to it. And often folks who have been doing the practice for quite some time, as you have, write blog articles. And so we like to regularly bring that to people's attention and to have the authors of those blogs talk about their articles. And I really enjoyed, and I have to tell you, resonated a lot with your article.
Great.
So maybe you could tell us about it.
Yeah. I had been given the opportunity to participate and write a blog. And of course, conditioning grasps at all different, well, maybe I'll write about this and maybe I'll write about that. And then I had this experience of driving home from the monastery and supposedly losing an entire folder of recordings and sitting with it for the, the next 5 minutes of driving home of going, is it really lost? Is it really lost? And what would that be like if it's really lost? And going, I think I'm okay that it's lost. I'm just going to start again. Mm. New recording. Hey, guess what?
Yeah.
I just lost my entire folder.
And I mean, it's such a place, isn't it? That place of,
yeah.
I mean, truly, oh, okay, well, how could this be outside practice? It, of course, it's not. So this is what's happening. So, all right, so let me practice with this and have whatever experience I have with this.
Yeah, exactly so. And that is exactly where I started. And just to start over again and not feeling like anything was lost, but all of the places that I got to see in having that now be, having that folder now gone. It's funny. It turns out I got home and apparently the recorder was just reorganizing itself and the whole folder showed up again. But at that point,
don't you love it? If we wanted to get really sort of religious or whatever about it, we'd say, so life back there, like, oh, let's give Beth this because, gosh, this would be perfect for her right now, right? And then, wow, she got that fast. All right, well, let's reload it back.
Yeah.
Let's put the folder back on the recorder.
Yes, that is a great way of looking at it. It kind of brings to mind what the guide has always offered, which is we can let go of a lot of things. We don't have to ever give it up. It wasn't like I set out and said, okay, I'm going to, get rid of this folder. I have no need for it. It was literally okay, it's gone. How about letting it go? And then, yes, to have it magically, show up again and just to go, okay, well, what do I really want to do? And what it really showed me was this sense of clinging to things, of clinging to, well, I got to have the right folder with the right recordings in it to have the right experience, to have the right, practice moment and all of that kind of stuff. And it kind of blew the doors wide open to, what I feel like practice is showing us all the time is that, and exactly what you said, which is, what's happening in this moment is the perfect opportunity to practice.
Yeah. Well, and it's so subtle, isn't it? Because, so that seems more clear maybe in content of our lives that isn't practice. And then when you come to the content of practice, it seems like it can get subtle and we can get bamboozled. But no, I mean, I think if I remember correctly in the article, you were talking about there were some big things you had seen that were recorded in this folder, right? I mean, this was the stuff that was going to change your life. Right? And to realize that can just as much be the content as anything else in our lives. And so to really have that process of, well, you know what? If clinging doesn't serve me in my relationships or my job or in finances or then it's not going to serve me with my recordings either. And so to get to practice there, realizing, okay, how I do anything is how I do everything. So the condition process is going to be brought to recording. And so let me step back and actually practice with all of that. And then, of course, the beautiful thing, I think I remember this correctly, that in the article, when you really thought they were gone was, well, and you just said it. Okay, good. Well, we'll start now. Because those insights didn't go anywhere, right? And it's always cycling through. And there are things that I'm seeing right now, so I can start here.
Yes, that's exactly it. That was a lot of what I got to see in this whole process was the lamenting of the recording of the insight being gone did not mean that the transformation was null. It meant that, oh, that's right. It really just reinforced that place of the transformation happened. The insight had dropped in. I've been living with that insight for quite a while. It's not that I have to, you know, it's lovely to have recordings to go back to, absolutely, and mm-hmm. remind us of what those mm-hmm. insights were. But it's also a place of practice of, but I don't have to have that recording to live from a place right now of, well, yeah. what's the insight from all of this? And it's already, I believe, is that it's already been incorporated in approaching this moment now.
Yeah, exactly. I can't quite see it, Beth. It's swimming around somewhere, but there's an analogy in there around the one that was dropping in was sort of weightlifting, right? And I'm weightlifting. Actually, it just came up for me today because we were outside. I just, you know, doing all this outdoor work, which I absolutely love. And watching someone chainsaw and projecting a lot of upper body strength in the way that this person was chainsawing. And what I got to was, wow, I'm really inspired to increase my upper body strength. And that it would be like as if I go to the gym to lift weights, and then that's all I ever do. I just go to the gym and lift weights. But to realize now I can use that. I can chainsaw, and I can weed eat, and I can all that upper body strength isn't just for going to the gym. I actually can now use that. And at the same time, I'm not going to just say, well, yeah, now I have upper body strength, and I'm not going to use my weights. So that recording and listening is always there for us, but it's not it's not the end of the story. Like, we get to actually use the things that are happening for us in recording and listening and take them out into our moment-by-moment lives.
Wow, yeah, exactly. And I do, you know, that analogy really resonates with me. It's the place of going through the practice tools and really using them and then seeing how that comes into play in our everyday life when we aren't saying, oh, here right now I'm going to practice. It's more like it just shows up. And you go, wow, I that came up because I have been doing all this practice where it just organically has incorporated itself now where I can approach it, you know, in a completely, completely different way.
Mm-hmm.
If I am tracking, you know, what you're saying.
Yeah.
And the ability to be able to really use that in new and fun ways of supporting myself in other practice moments or, you know, in my everyday life.
Yeah.
Well,
okay,
so right.
Which is all the same. Exactly. Yeah. And what, you know, as you're saying that, what's coming up for me so strongly is the process is the outcome. And I think that's one of the things that I so loved about your article that I feel like, and we had a good news update around recording and listening, oh gosh, I want to say, I don't know, sometime in the end of last year, I think, where we were talking about that same, you know, it was a slightly different content, but the process that happens for people around recordings and wanting to organize them and wanting to do this, and gosh, I'm not sure if I, and do I shuffle them and how do I, and so to realize, you know, that conditioning is back there trying to, you know, run its shtick on everything. But if we get it that, you know, first of all, that's okay. When I pay attention, everything enlightens. So whatever conditioning is doing around recording and listening, I can see that as part of, oh, that's informative because that process is likely happening everywhere. You know, whatever it is for the perfectionist process or the gotta hang on to it and hoard them all or, you know, whatever
mm-hmm,
it is.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
that,
oh, go ahead.
Yeah, please. No, please go ahead.
Well, what's dropping in when you're saying that is this place where, what I think I also really got a chance to see was there were a ton of recordings that I made like around the time when my dogs were sick with cancer and were dying and died. And super helpful recordings, like super helpful to be able to turn to the recorder and just, you know, be able to say exactly what was going on for me and to hear the wisdom from the mentor and to hear the support and encouragement of, you know, I'm with you. And to recognize that, you know, the mentor recordings are super helpful to keep around because those are kind of timeless. But the recordings of making just the person talking, to go back and listen to those wasn't actually helpful because it just kind of put me back in that spot. So to be able to go back and just say, you know, these serve their purpose and now I can let them go is just a wonderful place of just really recognizing I'm in a different place now and I valued those for the time and the and what they did, but they're, you know, that I don't need them anymore.
So to realize they served a purpose. They were really important at the time and they elicited that mentoring presence. And so having that, keeping that mentoring presence there is really helpful. But maybe not necessarily always going back to the person who was in a particular situation at a particular moment in time.
Yeah,
and I think that what we catch on to, it's like we talk about with insights, right? That I know for me at least, it gets everything gets like tightened out. That insight is so good, and that's going to change everything. And you know, and forgetting that that insight is a process, and I'm practicing the process of insight, not trying to clamp down on a particular insight. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And it kind of goes back to what you were saying about, well, I got to have a folder that has this in it and I've got to categorize them in you know, in all these different ways. It really kind of opens the door to, you know, it's really good. I do have a couple of folders that have specific things in them, but then everything else can kind of be how it is with this fluidity of, you know, when I listen back to it, is it really providing me to be in that process, whatever it is, love, gratitude, presence, or is this, you know, distracting now? And just being able to say, you know, I can let it go. And I don't have to, you know, keep everything so meticulously organized.
Right, and I can watch that process as the impulse to do that happens. Yes, exactly. So we are at the top of the what's that, Beth?
Oh, it was fun. I was just saying it was a really fun place to be.
Yeah, very fun. Way more fun than the story of, oh, my God, I can't believe it.
Yeah, exactly.
So anything else you wanted to add in, Beth, before we end?
Not particularly. I just I'm happy to share you know, the experience through the blogging and to encourage folks to be playful with it.
Exactly. Yep. Experiment. Find your way.
Exactly.
Have fun.
That's a great way. Yeah. Experiment.
Good. Great. Well, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you, Jen. Happy to be here.
All right. All right, me too. Thanks, Beth.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Beth. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry. Sherry, are you there?
Oh, I was muted. I was muted. Oh, I got to stop doing that.
And you're a little bit underwater.
No.
That's better.
Is that better? Oh, my gosh.
Okay, keep shouting. That'll help.
Stand outside with the mosquitoes. So as I was muted, I was asking how you are.
I'm great. Thank you. And thank you. How are you?
Good. Okay. Really good. I very much enjoyed that conversation. There was so much in that conversation that I enjoyed. It was really such a fun reminders, so many good analogies and places to look, and I particularly like that being playful and experimenting, and you know, it's like you've just been given a new best friend who loves you unconditionally and wants to talk with you all the time. So why not enjoy that relationship? It was good.
Yes. Yeah, it was great. I especially enjoyed the idea of seeing insight as a process rather than having gotten one, trying to keep it and reuse it, maybe when it's past its time.
Yes. Yes. Because when they were talking about that, I was thinking about, I've lived a long time, and I was thinking about all of the things that I've had and loved in my life, and
yeah,
how grateful I am that I don't still have them all.
Mm,
you know,
yes,
that clinging kind of way we are with things,
yes,
when we want them, and then we, as Beth and Jen were saying, you know, we move on, and we're really a different person. And so we stop clinging to those things, and ourselves should be at the top of that list, right? there are just so many decades of my life that I really don't need to cling to anything about them because I'm not there any longer. And so even to have memories, and as you know, I'm not a fan of memories at all, it's such a perfect example. You know, why hold on to stories about times and places and people that are long gone? We can just be open to the what's happening right now and the people in our lives and what's going on now. So free.
Yes.
So relaxing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Totally.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an announcement here.
Oh, good.
Journey through the poems of the great mystics at a brand new retreat at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in May. The Blessed is the Knowledge of Emptiness retreat offers an opportunity to have your own direct experience of the divine shining through. This retreat, May 27th through June 1st, includes guidance with Sherry and is for those grounded in this awareness practice.
Mm-hmm. Very excited about it, I got to tell you.
Great.
Yeah.
The powerful There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreats provide an opportunity to see directly how we are rejected and punished by the voices of self-hate, and to discover how to let that go. This foundational work is challenging, joyous, scary, and loving, and among the most important work you will ever do. Two retreats are coming up, June 29th through July 6th, and August 3rd through August 10th at the Zen Monastery Peace Center.
Mm-hmm.
Also in August, a new virtual group coaching class will help us bring conscious, compassionate awareness to what and how we eat. The four-week compassionate eating class, beginning August 7th, will use weekly calls and email check-ins to provide support and inspiration for making conscious, compassionate food choices.
Oh, lovely.
Yes,
summertime. Yep. What a beautiful time to do that. I guess the dead of winter would be a really fun time to do it too, but it just seems like in the summer there's so much so much good food to enjoy, avail ourselves of.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And for these and other opportunities, please visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for today's show. You can press *6 and then 1 to get in the queue and make a show to talk with Sherry and a conversation that's about 5 minutes in length and on one topic is great.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we are ready here, Sherry.
All right.
All right. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Emily from Seattle again.
Hi, Emily.
Hello, Emily.
Hi. I had something coming up for me in my house, and it's about a dog I live with, and it's my stepdog, and I never quite bonded with him. I mean, I did not bond with him, and I'm not a dog person to begin with. But he's part of our family, and my son loves him, and so it kind of felt like this non-acceptance that went on around him. And he got a tumor in his leg. And I was, and I was not very too involved. It was, you know, I told my wife, I said, you know, you make the decision, because it was about amputating or putting him down. And I said, you make the decision, I'll support you. And so she decided to do the amputation. And then I'm just really kind of shocked by my reaction to it. Like, I get, it's a reaction of non-compassion that's really troubling me. And the, I can't find any compassion there, and I feel like I'm so preoccupied with, that's bad, that's wrong. It came home with this, like, really gruesome wound and sick, and I can't, I'm just, like, I can't find any
repelled
compassion
by the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's disgust, and then it's, I just am like, that's so mean. That's so.
So, yeah, well, absolutely. So, it's a really tough place, isn't it? Because
what's that?
Because
I can't hear you.
Oh dear.
Oh, now I can.
Oh.
You're underwater there, Sherry. Try again.
Doggone it. Going out with the mosquitoes, okay? That's just all there is to it.
You're good now. You're good now.
Okay, calm down. So it's just such a tough place, because you never sparked to this guy in the first place, right?
Right.
You just didn't. And that's a spiritual opportunity for us, right? But we all know it. Right. So, you know, I often kid about the idea of loving from afar. You know, there are just so many people and creatures and things and circumstances that we can love in spirit, as long as they're not in our proximity. But when we're living with them, then we've sort of moved into Gandhi territory, right? Or Jesus or the Buddha or somebody who we can, at least I sense, is
is beyond us spiritually, right? Mm-hmm. Are you in agreement? Are we in agreement so far?
Yeah. So you're saying that they're beyond me spiritually?
Or they're kind of beyond all of us. So, you know, Jesus's way of okay. saying it, it, love one another as I have loved you. Okay. But then here we are, these little mortals, right, trying to do that, knowing that we should and we actually want to, but it's really, really, really hard to do, right? So mm-hmm. that's the first point that I would make, to not let self-hate take this over. You are having the reaction that you're having. Is it something you're particularly proud of? No. But is it understandable? Absolutely. It's what we're working on, right? When we mm-hmm. when we're choosing the unconditional, that's what we're going for. That's what we're working on. We're not there yet. So to have self-hate come in and start that kind of campaign of humiliation and beatings and shaming and that sort of thing because you feel the way you feel is just not helpful, as you noticed.
Yeah, I can see that. But I wonder what else is going on. Like,
that's the next step, isn't it? So that reaction from ego is designed to just keep you feeling bad. So you're not supposed to explore what's going on. You're just supposed to stay stuck in you're an awful, unloving, uncompassionate person, and that's all there is to it. But of course, mm-hmm. that's not the case. And so you know there's something going on here, right? And mm-hmm. because you practice awareness, you want to find out what that is. You mm-hmm. not because you're going to get to some place, but because you want to find out what is going on. You're being kept in an unhappy place. We want to know why. What's going on with that, right? So my encouragement is some two-handed recordings. Talk to the person, and you know, you may have a crew there, right? So there's somebody who is just not a dog person. Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. You know, why not? Why not? You know, tons of people adore dogs. So what happened? Why? You know, where's the karma there? Where's the mm-hmm. disconnect there? Because we'd like to know what happened to her that she just doesn't spark to dogs, okay? And then there is whoever might be resentful of having to share a home with somebody that she doesn't like. Okay, mm-hmm. let's see what she has to say about that. And there's also probably somebody who feels all of that and also feels bad because her son likes this little, now 3.5, I guess, leg person. And so there's that. There's feeling bad about, why can't you be more charitable, or why can't you be more open, or, you know, that sort of thing. And then there's somebody who would just legitimately like not to have this as an issue because she'd like for it not to be an issue because there are enough issues in life without this, especially since, basically, she's stuck with this dog, right? Then mm-hmm. there's the person who is repelled by the physical aspect of it. You know, you didn't become a nurse, did you? Or a doctor?
No.
Yeah. Yes, no. So surgery is not something that is of interest to you. In fact, it's disgusting and repellent, right? And mm-hmm. so to get to know, and who knows who else you're going to find, Emily, but that would be an interesting group, really to get to know without letting self-hate come in and judge these people for having the experience they're having.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I did a little bit of that, but when you're describing it to that extent, I really get a feeling of a lot of space there. Like,
yes.
Well, like you said, space to explore.
Yes. Yes. And you know, you, authentic human being, you don't hate these people or think they're disgusting. In fact, you can understand each one of those perspectives. You can have great compassion for each of those perspectives, right? And so that's the place to start, right? Compassion for the dog is going to come after compassion for the person. Right?
Yeah,
first,
okay.
Right? First you're going to embrace her, and from that place of everybody's accepted in this, they don't have to like it. It doesn't have to be something that anybody prefers, but you will still, I'm predicting, move to a place where you can actually have sympathy for the pooch and certainly for your son, and as well as the woman who, you know, this is just not her choice. This is just not anything she ever wanted to do, but she's doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that I could see that.
Yeah.
That would be a good place to focus instead of on him.
Yes, on him or on her via self-hate. Right? Either one of those is not really a good place to be. There's just a lot of people who need to be heard in a space of compassion and acceptance.
Yeah.
Which is going to take care of you, right? Because you're going to be in compassion and acceptance instead of being beaten by self-hatred.
Right. And I just, like, I see my attention was on everything that's wrong. Just
that's
where my attention was going.
Yeah. Which is understandable. You were under siege, right? You're under siege from self-hate. And part of that is feeling victimized by the circumstance. So you're in a crummy circumstance that you don't want to be in, and then you're being beaten for not being more cheerful about it. You know, that's just not kind.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Let me know. Huh?
Thank you. I will.
You are
so
welcome.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Good night.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for joining us, Emily. Sherry, what I heard in that conversation is bringing compassion to everything, to the lack of compassion.
And, yes, exactly.
The value in that is incredible.
Yeah, yeah. Because if somebody has done something really, let's just say, unfortunate to you, and self-hate would say, well, you have to forgive them. You have to understand them and forgive them and embrace them. And you're not ready to get out of, but what they did to me was awful.
Right.
Right? So first we have to deal with that and let that person know, I hear you. I understand. That is absolutely true. What you're experiencing is in fact the case. And from being heard and sympathized with and understood in that way, we can often find a generosity. But when we're being kept in deprivation, it is just smart not to be generous.
Right.
Right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Because if you're made to be generous out of a place of deprivation, then that's it. That's it. And, you know, even our spiritual heroes, the kind of people I was talking about, they didn't do what they did out of deprivation. You know, I'll just talk about Jesus because those are the most famous stories for most people. He didn't turn the other cheek out of deprivation. He turned the other cheek out of fulfillment, out of completion, out of satisfaction. out of having more, much more than anyone else had. He could afford to be generous.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Comes from a different place.
A completely different place. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But self-hate would have us stay in that abused place and then be made to feel bad because we're not overflowing with loving kindness as we're being abused. You know, it's like we talk about expecting a starving child to share their food. It's just cruel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Oh, my goodness.
All right. We have another call here.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Jill in Brooklyn.
Well, hello, Jill.
Jill.
Goodness
hello.
Gracious. We get to talk a lot. This is lovely.
I know.
What's going on?
Well, I've been looking a lot at emotions. My grandmother passed away last week, and I spent the weekend with family. And so, first of all, like nothing that I expected to happen in this whole process happened as far as how I was going to feel or, you know, how my parents were going to react and all of that stuff. So it was really a weekend full of surprises, which was, I didn't even know, actually, I had expectations as to, you know, what, how it was going to unfold, and so that was just sort of it was just great to see all of that. Like, I guess kept bumping into, oh, I guess I had this expectation because what's happening is a little
right.
bit of a surprise to me.
Oh, that's such just that is such a good point. Every time I'm surprised, I can know I had an expectation, right? Because those little suckers, they hide out and they are hard to see. And of course, because I'm projecting you pretty centered during this, you were surprised rather than dismayed or horrified or startled or
right.
any of the ways we are when ego is there with its expectations.
Oh, I'm glad that you pointed to that because, I think I can see how if I wasn't, I could be disappointed or, you know, it was... I mean, everything was, there was a lot of unexpected things I encountered. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And even in myself, I mean, I really appreciated the last conversation. It was even, you know, how, you know, what was coming up for me during the whole thing. And, you know, because, you know, with funerals, it's not just the passing of the person. It's, you know, how the pressure that the family's under and how everyone's reacting to it and the shift in the dynamic now that this person has passed and who, and, you know, it's, you know, it was my mother's, it was my father's mother, but it was my mother's in-law. So that was, there was,
that's a long time to have a mother-in-law.
Oh,
I'll tell you that.
Oh my God. She counted the minutes. I'm telling you.
that we are kind of back to Emily's pooch, aren't
exactly.
we?
You know, exactly.
It's like I'm living with somebody I really don't want to be living with, and
and just to be with them, and also, you know, I just as you know, I always have a lot of curiosity about my own emotions, and they also can surprise me, and I guess the one thing I was thinking of when, sorry?
Oh, I was just going to say it was a workshop, clearly.
Oh, my goodness.
But go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I know, I feel like I could process map like 10 different things about this, and I should, you know, that sounds like actually a fun project, but when I was coming back on the train, you know, there was a moment, because my mother is also ill. She'll recover, but she's been quite ill for the past 6 weeks. And so you know, what I noticed was that when my attention was on that fact and some, you know, interactions she had with my father and just how broken up he was about, you know, his wife's illness. And, you know, I felt so sad. And
he had a double whammy.
Boy, that man, right? He yeah. really, yeah, he's had quite a winter and spring. And yeah, so when I think about that and him, it really moves me to tears. And so, you know, when I was coming back on the train, I was listening to recordings, but I felt like that what so much had happened, that listening to the recordings, that I kept, can you tell I'm in New York City?
Yeah, I can tell.
it'll pass in a second. Yeah, that when I was listening to recordings, like my attention would, it just was, I was just somewhere else, you know? And so I just put the recording aside and just sat with what, tried to, you know, just see what was here. And I just found that, you know, I was sort of with everything, but then when a few memories would come up, I would just really get moved to tears. And it just, you know, and just looking at how long I would stay there with that memory, or if I would move away from it and all of that stuff. It just, yeah, it was really, it was.
It's a wonderful thing to be able to be with oneself, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, our whole way of being as conditioned individuals, the whole point is to get away from ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not stated that way, but that's mm-hmm. what's going on.
Yeah.
Right? That's ego's whole deal. Get as far away from yourself as you possibly can. It's the only hope you have for happiness.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
of course, it's just guaranteed unhappiness. It's absolutely the cause of suffering. But that's the belief. So to realize the power of being able simply to sit still and be with whatever arises inside.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And to not take the hook of having some sort of judgment about it or expectation mm-hmm. that it means this or it means that, or and I mean, that's been such a long time practice for me, is just to allow whatever's happening to happen and to not, you know, not think it should be different.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Yes. Right. Again, conditioning is to make meaning.
Right.
Right. Oh, well, so you're, well, that's probably to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And to put it in a context, to put it in a story.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so rather to just sit there and just watch it arise and watch it pass away. Watch it arise and watch it pass away.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can't remember if it was in a conversation with you or someone recently I had about, you know, I feel like a lot of my emotions are just in these little jars. It was with you, I think. I think we've talked so often recently. And that they're just waiting to escape. You know, I have these emotions that are just kind of like the ones that were not let out are just hanging around looking for an open. They're looking for a Hallmark uh-huh. card or something. They're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Something that says welcome.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay to be here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That this is, and so I was also looking at just trying to let. Yeah. Just. I mean, it's. I feel like it's such a success for me to have that experience. You know, in front of my father on the train. You know, sitting next to a stranger, mm-hmm. like just sort of not try and have. And force a certain experience, but just, you know, let the bubbles pop as they pop and not.
Yeah. Yeah. Just be a witness.
Just be a witness.
Yeah. Wow.
So,
well,
anyway.
As we often say, this is why we practice, right? These are the kinds of occasions in life that we practice to be ready for, to be able to be present with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then all of the. Everyone, you know, practice for the end and practice for the close to the end, all of that stuff. I
mm-hmm.
it was all there. So anyway, well, I'm mm-hmm. glad we get a chance to talk.
Yes, yes. It's always a pleasure, Jill. Always a pleasure. Take good care of her.
Me too. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jill. And Sherry, we are going to break here to hear from our recording and listening program, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers.
All right.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. Recording and listening is based on a radical idea that rather than being lost in a conversation and conditioned mind, we can live in what's true, what's real, what's arising in life in the moment. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report that finding refuge in my own voice and strengthening the awareness of the mentor is both transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply email rltrainer@livingcompassion.org. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence with the support of recording and listening.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Sherry, we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry, this is Beth.
Hey, Beth. Yeah, how are you doing?
Today's not been a good health day.
Mm.
But I like to put myself in the queue just in case, because it causes me to listen in a more active place.
Yes, good, because what if I pull a pop quiz? You want to be right.
Yeah, but this is one of those days where the most exciting thing are the shadows, kind of the way they move across the floor. And how, you know, the light changes and so forth. Yeah. But I'd like to return to dogs. As a topic, because it kind of, since the earlier conversation, I'm one of those people that I just don't like dogs. I never have. I mean, I don't know where it came from. I don't know, but I'm a cat person. And a couple of things have, you know, I've been working with this for, 15, 20 years. Before that, I just didn't like them. But a couple of things that I've seen from it. The dog whisperer changed my whole relationship with dogs.
Can you say more, Beth?
I learned how to interact with them. I learned that, they're never going to be my baby. They're never going to be, but I know how to talk to dogs. And I've got a lot of dogs on my route. And, you know, we say, hey, check in, and then they go about their business and I go about mine. I don't need anything from them.
Right.
They don't need anything from me.
Right. Right. You coexist.
Yes. And I've learned to kind of, I use some of these techniques on myself.
Say more about that.
Well, so the dog whisperer talks about how to break a dog's attention. and I kind of, when I find myself, like with a story going around and around and around and around and around and around and, around and you know, it's not going to stop. So I jerk it.
Jerk on your collar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of the soft underbelly. And it's not mean, it's just...
Right.
Because
my
attention. Focus gets... Yeah, or expand your focus. Because it gets really focused. And there's no possibility except this one thing. And when I jerk my attention, it's like, oh, where did that come from?
Do you mean at this point it just happens? It doesn't feel like something you initiate?
Yeah, there is some of that. But it's like I get stubborn. And I break my stubbornness. And when I break my stubbornness, there are possibilities.
Yes.
That weren't there when my focus
was
very tiny.
That's right, because focused on stubborn is ego's way of keeping a person stuck. Right? So when we break that habit, and a lot of it is just practice, right? So we train ourselves to recognize what that is, stubbornness. Now, in order to recognize it, I can't be identified with it. So I've already, in a way, the leash has been jerked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but there was a time before I became aware that I didn't like dogs, where, you know, I wasn't very nice to them. And the jerking was not coming from the same place.
That's right. Yeah. You weren't being jerked into presence. You were being jerked into identification.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. There is another bit to it that's kind of like escaped over to the side about dogs. And I do have some dogs that I actually like.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Have you done the basic projection exercise on them? What do you not like about them?
Well, I've been told by one of my early doctors in acupuncturist that she thought I was a dog. Like, the way I interact with people is like I get into these alpha dog fights. So... Yeah, I think that was a definite point where my reaction to dogs changed quite a bit. So I think I was relating to them too much.
Or relating as them.
I was relating as a dog.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And that's just not usual.
Right, as a dog, they were threatening. Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They were competition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow, very fun.
Yeah. And there was a point when I became aware of it. When I was at the monastery, we did something at the Mountain View Center, and I was asked to take the dog for a walk, and the dog didn't want to go with me, so I jerked really hard on his leash, and you caught me. Doing that.
Oh, what a bad moment, huh?
No, but it was like, you know, and now 15 years later, I mean, that was like the beginning of their work. That was the beginning of, you know, what's going on here.
Yeah, yeah. Because before that, it was probably fairly unconscious, right? Then poof, it got brought into conscious awareness, and that's that place of, well, curiosity. What the heck is going on? What am I doing here? Yeah. Yeah, that's very helpful. And especially when we do the projection exercise and get a sense of what really is going on with me, then something in egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate that I have always assumed is me it becomes clear what that is. That changes my relationship with that. And so now I can actually have the attention on what's going on, where it's going on. Right? I don't need to get pulled into it has something to do with somebody else. I can turn attention to it right where it lives.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's very good. Yeah. All right.
Again, well, I am thankful.
Yes. Well, practice is a very good and helpful thing, isn't it? It's just there's always a way through. There's always a way out. There's always something for us other than judgment, criticism, self-hate, beatings, suffering that ego would like to offer up for us. But we have to be here. We have to be willing to pay attention, which is what you're describing. Yeah.
It's a practice for every second.
And for every second. That's right. Which is again what Jill was talking about. Right? Just being there, just watching it arise, watching it pass away, watching it arise, watching it pass away. And we can see what the labels are that go with it and the meanings and that sort of thing. It's really important that we not get pulled into it because, of course, those are all conditioned. They're not true.
Yeah.
You know, I've been taught to think that or I've been taught to believe that, but it's not true. It's just how I've been conditioned. All right. Well, thank you, my dear.
Thank you.
Oh,
down the
always
road.
Always great to hear from you. All right. Take good care. All right. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. Sherry, I especially appreciated that piece at the end there about there always being a way out, because it seems to me that that's a key piece of the suffering from conditioning is that I'm stuck. I'm doomed. I'm here forever. This story has always been here. It's always going to be here.
Right. Yeah. It's true.
It's true. It's true and real.
Yeah. And then that's the power of knowing how to direct the attention. Because instead of doing what we're supposed to do, supposed to in quotes, which is get away from it as fast as possible, ignore it as thoroughly as we can, deny it, feel bad, bargain, plead for our lives. If we just stop and turn attention to it, okay, what? And if we stay in that place of curiosity, of questioning, it just can't stand up. It just can't, because there's nothing to it. It's not real.
Yes. Yeah, great.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, Sherry, we have time for at least one more caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael, this is Greta.
Hello, Greta.
Hey, Greta.
How are you doing? Oh, pretty good today. It's nice and cool and rainy again, so I know my identity.
Aha. Uh-huh. You like nice and cool and rainy.
Well, generally, as a rule, it's okay however it is, but we've been in so much sunshine, it's hard to resemble Washington.
Uh-huh. You forget where you live. You think you're in Orange County in California, right?
That's right.
This is not right. Yeah.
Well, right. I put myself in the queue, and that the end of that last discussion is really where I was, which was curiosity. So just a little I'm taking a walk, so I'm a little out of breath, so I'll stop. I've been looking at the subpersonalities that have been showing up in the year-long retreat and also really in life in relation to a volunteer project that I'm working on. And it's, I'm starting to get really curious because it seems like I'm seeing them as they would have been as they emerged. So a very, very young part, and then the next one, and the next one, in reaction to things that are going on. And I think I have, because I'm somewhat familiar with them over years of practice, there's sort of that context in the back of my mind. But this afternoon, there was just another thing that I acted out, and then I stepped away from it, and I started to become curious about, oh, so maybe that was, you know, the next in line to emerge in my whole evolution. Then it just became kind of fun to say, well, what's going to happen next? Who's going to, you know, how am I going to see this in another, you know, shining another light or shining a light in a different way?
So it sounds like a living process map.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's all, in a way, I could say it's all jumbled up, but in another way, I'm seeing it pretty clearly. So I've got this real-life living situation acting out with external persons, and then we have the year-long retreat where I'm asking, you know, what is this, and looking at internal persons, and I guess I would say I'm not actively trying to retrieve memories so much as try to see what's here right now in response to the assignment.
Yes. Yes, exactly so. That is just beautifully and perfectly stated. We don't need to go delving and mucking around in the, in quotes, past. If we just stay present in the way you're describing, we're going to see it all. So as you say, something happens, and I realize that emotionally, I'm about four, right? I have a very child reaction to what's going on, right? And then I'm just staying with that. Just again on the train. You know, this is what's here, and everything about that drops in, right? And there may be memories with it, and then staying with it, the next thing unfolds. And the reason that it does that, what we can know about this as a process that we can all make use of, is that we are constantly replicating that sequence.
Yeah, I see that now. And it's just so interesting because I don't even know how to say it. There are all these processes that we're engaged in, and I'm using the collective we. I am engaged in all these different processes with different people, places, or things, or situations, but they all intersect, well, they all intersect in me, but they all intersect, the ripples outer, if you had a circle around each of those processes, at some point, there are places where they intersect. Sometimes they might intersect just a little bit, tangentially, sometimes they have a lot in common. But what I'm seeing in this sort, so one of the processes is my health, and that's kind of an uber process because it's been a lifelong issue for me. But what I'm seeing about that, so each of these things informs all of the other processes that I'm engaged in. And this health issue is really held in place in a large measure by this fight, flight, or fear response of this 3 or 4 year old that thought they had to hold everybody off, hold it all together, protect the parts that were vulnerable, that had to do it all. And I've just been watching that literally play out in this thing I'm mm-hmm. trying to do as an adult where mm-hmm. I'm all tense, all tight, can't breathe, gotta, you know, just
mm-hmm.
seeing
life
the whole
and death.
Thing. Life or death, mm-hmm. and just noticing, mm-hmm. I mean, I know that I hold this tension in my body in response to even the littlest thing, but to just be in it was so mm-hmm. clear, and to connect it then back to, oh my God, there's a very young person who's got this whole weight of the world, literally, and is trying to mm-hmm. do everything, and has mm-hmm. no, I mean, all the conversations today, I could just go right there. There's no compassion for, there's fear, there's whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And watching it as you're watching it, I bet you can also see, and I think this is what you said, but I'm checking it out. You can also see what happened to her when she went to school, right? When there's the next layer of threat that comes in, how her orientation morphed in order to accommodate this new threat. And then, you know, just for most of us, that subtle changes until about preteen, and then a whole nother way of, and then you hit puberty, right? The teenage years. And what does that turn in? How is that same handling of threat morphed in order to accommodate that point in life?
Yeah, exactly. So the thing I saw today was still a very young part of the process, but it was just a, mm-hmm. another clarification or just another facet. But what I've been seeing about all the ages that you just referred to is how the content of the, and why I think it's all coming up more viscerally is the content of this month's practice focus of sexuality really touches on every aspect of personality
yeah.
and why people can just fall into identification so readily, because it wakes all of that up and we can feel it in our
yes.
body. And of all the things we would feel in our body, that's one of the places that's a door in or a doorway that opens.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And oftentimes when people think about sexuality, of course, they think about adults. Think about adults as being the sexual people. But if you spend any time around kids, or if you remember being one, kids are sexual beings very, very, very early, in the sense of being aware of genitals, being aware of how their body feels under certain circumstances at very, very early ages, right? So that kind of, as you say, that topic can really just bring to the fore all kinds of different reactions, different karmic reactions, different ages, different ways of coping, different stories, different resistance. And yeah, it's big, isn't it? I thought this morning, you know, I thought about asking Ashwini and asking people, maybe we should spend another month with this one, because it is so, there's just so much to it.
Yeah, and when I listen, I hear things that I hadn't thought of, which is why we're so grateful for Sangha informing each other. And then
mm-hmm.
I go down, like somebody talked about secrecy, I went
mm-hmm.
completely down there, and I barely began to explore how that played out in my life. And,
yeah.
you know, and then it's not just about the content of sexuality. It becomes about the process of secrecy and who lied
yes.
and who didn't tell lies, and how you couldn't
yes.
actually speak truth to your parents because they told you were lying when you were speaking the truth. And there goes a whole nother chapter of your life. So, yeah, it's really like waking up all these things. And I just find it fascinating, and that's why, like I said, I put myself in the queue, because now I'm really starting to be curious, well, what's going to show up next, or how is it going to reveal itself? And yet I'm seeing it on so many layers, back to self-care, right? So how have I given up self-care because I'm all afraid and I'm a three-year-old and da-da-da-da.
Right.
Yep, it's great.
Yes. Right. It is great. And again, it really argues for learning how to be still and let everything be as it is. Because when we're still and allowing everything to be exactly as it is, that's when we get to see it, right? And we see it without all of the veneer that we are supposed to see. We just see it. And as we see it, the clarity about it is apparent to us. And that's, of course, where freedom comes from. Because we're left in that, oh my gosh. So, you know, so it never meant that? That was
so there,
not...
Yeah. There really is nothing wrong. And then we just to expand into the bigness of that statement. There really is nothing wrong. Yeah.
Nothing wrong.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary. Thank you, Greta.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you for the practice.
Right.
Thank you, Michael. Uh-huh. Good night.
Take care. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Greta. And thank you, Sherry, for another great open air.
Thank you, Michael.
Wonderful
that
show.
That was super fun.
Yes.
We'll do it
fantastic.
Again, huh?
We will do it again. Lovely.
All right.
Go happy.
All right. Go happy. Thank you, Michael.
Okay.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.